brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Okay, we have an exciting guest with us. Elliot Cohen is the author of Plant Spirit Medicine and a shaman in the Hukou tradition. He is the founder of the Plant Spirit Medicine Seminary and the Blue Deer Center. As a provider at the Blue Deer Center, Elliot offers plant spirit medicine practitioner training courses, continuing education for PSM practitioners, healing camps based on traditional Hukou healing and animal totem poles. Elliot, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Wicho is how it's said.
Wicho, thank you. Elliot has been teaching, leading healing retreats and maintaining private practice for many years. He began to study and practice herbalism in 1969, then temporarily set it aside to study acupuncture. He received his licentiate bachelor and master acupuncture degrees from the J.R. Worsley at the College of Traditional Acupuncture, Leamington Spa, England, and served on the faculty of the institution in 1979 through 1980.
In the early 1980s, Elliot once again turned his attention to herbal healing. Following a recommendation by Dr. Worsley, he began seeking the guidance of the plants themselves to support the healing of his clients. And in this way, Elliot rediscovered the ancient shamanic practice of plant spirit medicine. Elliot continued his healing work through the traditions of the Huichoy people of Mexico. He completed his shamanic apprenticeship with the late Don Guadalupe Gonzalez Rios, an eminent Huichoy Indian shaman. Don Guadalupe ritually recognized Elliot as a leader of shamanic apprentices in the Huichoy tradition, and today more than 20 former apprentices are initiated shamans themselves. Through his great wit, will, wisdom, and unrelenting enthusiasm, Elliot Cohen brings us the sacred healing traditions of the Huichoy Indians and the plant spirits. Plant spirits are Paula's and my favorite.
Oh, yes.
Elliot, we welcome you.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Oh, that's been my favorite topic from the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I myself, I've had some experiences where my plants outside my window have wrapped themselves around me, and I have awakened to feel their energy, and I can see what plants have wrapped themselves around me. That was pretty incredible and very exciting for me.
And I've studied with Michelle Small Wright. I don't know if you know who she is.
I certainly know of her work. I don't know her personally. Yeah.
Yes. So we're both enthusiastic about the plant spirit world. So how did you get involved?
With plant spirit medicine?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose it started years ago, in the late 60s and early 70s. I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but there was a dread epidemic disease called back-to-the-land fever back then. I'm joking, of course. But a lot of young people were interested in returning to the land, and I was one of them.
During the hippie period?
Pardon me? Yes, that's right. And I had a small farm in Vermont. Had a goat who got sick. And nothing seemed to help her. Eventually, I took her to see the local vet, and he looked at her briefly and said, she's got such and such, he named a goat disease, said that she was going to go blind and then die, and there was no cure for her situation. So I took her home, and I decided that, well, she was going to die anyway. I wasn't going to kill her by experimenting a bit. So I had a book on veterinary herbal medicine, and I looked up some her condition, and all the plants that were prescribed for that were growing on the farm, so I dosed her according to what the book said, and then 3 or 4 days, she was perfectly fine. Now, that was my introduction to both herbal medicine and, well, natural healing in general. And I continued studying and learning from there. That would be the beginning.
Well, what was it like as far as, you know, you experiencing the plants and everything? This is so stimulating to have this happen. Your inner self goes, wow, did this really happen?
You know? Yes.
And so when you went around to experiment with the plants and you saw what they were doing, what unusual experiences did you have?
Well, I'll tell you, in the beginning, it was really sort of it was a matter of, you know, reading books and trying things out. And I wasn't really aware of any contact with what I will now call the spirit of the plants. But at a certain point, I realized that if I was going to really be helpful as a healer, I needed to learn a lot more than I knew just from reading a few books. And I began to look for a teacher. And I looked long and hard. And the teacher I found who satisfied me that he had what I wanted to learn to offer as a teaching. Well, he wasn't an herbalist at all. He was an acupuncturist, Dr. Worsley in England that you mentioned. So I went and studied with him and practiced that form of acupuncture for many years. And eventually I determined that I was really interested in going back to my original, you might say, my first love, which was working with the plants, but now with some more of the depth of experience and training that I'd had in as a healer in Chinese medicine. And, I looked here and there, and I ran into a number of dead ends. And eventually, after being very discouraged about being able to find out how to do this, a friend of mine suggested that I might want to look into what shamans had to offer about this, because he said there were people who, it is said, could communicate with the spirits of various things, so why not at plants and see what kind of medicine the plant spirits might have to offer. And that sounded like a very good idea to me, and I followed up on it, and it worked out. I began to discover that the plant spirits are accessible. First of all, to me, and later on, I discovered through teaching that other people can learn to see and hear and learn from the spirits of plants. And for the most part, though, it has to be done in a dream or a dream-like state. That's a kind of a state. The dream state is something that all people have, go into and out of every night. You can learn to go into and out of it in the day when you're awake, and in that state, people just naturally have experiences with beings that I would call spirits, and that can include plant spirits.
So, do you teach this type of work at the Blue Deer Center?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the Blue Deer Center, how did that all come about?
Well, the Blue Deer Center, let's see. Well, as you mentioned in your when we started off the show here, that my healing work started off with herbalism, went to acupuncture, then back to a kind of shamanic acupuncture herbalism. And I practiced that very successfully for a number of years, and I still felt I had more to learn, there was more to offer. And that led me to an apprenticeship as a shaman or a medicine man, sometimes called with the Huichol people. And that, too, was a very deep and eye-opening experience to me. And from that, I began to see that these very ancient, what we could call ancestral traditions, shamanic traditions that are held by indigenous people, not only the people I studied with, the Huichols, but others throughout the world, have a great deal to offer and are very, very effective at helping people in the modern world today. And in fact, I became convinced that, these indigenous peoples, the wisdom that they have is not only interesting and helpful, but it, I became convinced that it's absolutely essential in the sense that these are people who have known for thousands and thousands of years how to get along in the world and keep their own lives and the world around them in a good balance. And this is something that is becoming more evident every day, that something that we haven't really learned how to do, and we need to find out very quickly, because the way of life that we have now really is proving to be unsustainable. So the Blue Deer Center then was founded as a place where people could, more than just read about or hear a lecture or something, really a place where people could go to get a deep immersion in a number of these very ancient and very helpful indigenous traditions. And so that's how the Blue Deer Center came about. I do programs there myself, and we have a number of other tradition holders and shamans from various parts of the world who are have wonderful offerings that people, you know, in modern America can really come and immerse themselves in.
What is it like when people come into the center and you're listening to a lecture or you're being taught? Do you find that the people that have come pick things up easily, and that they can hook in to what you're saying because you're able to deliver specifically what to do or how to make connections?
Yes, well, the emphasis of the programs at Blue Deer Center is much less about lectures and the passing on of information and much more about direct experience.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yes, and so there's a great deal of what could be called ceremony and ritual and that kind of thing there to give people a direct experience of what in most other places is only spoken about at best. So yes, the answer is absolutely. People do respond to this and respond to it very deeply. Why? Because, well, no matter where you are and where you were born and who your parents and grandparents were, you know, everybody has what we could call an indigenous soul. And somewhere in us, we really know and resonate to these practices. They provide for us.
It's like feeling the rhythm of the earth.
Yes, that's part of it, absolutely. The rhythm and the song, yes.
Now, the Huichol people are in the in Mexico, correct?
That's right.
What part of Mexico?
Well, they're in the western Sierra Madre, and approximately a little less than halfway down, if you look at Mexico from border to border. So their homeland is in those mountains, roughly about the as far north as Guadalajara, if people know where that city is located.
Oh, I've traveled there and I've seen their artwork. It's beautiful.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, well, I'll just, since you mentioned the artwork, I'm going to make a little plug here. you know, I feel that we owe a great deal of gratitude to the Huichol people for sharing some of their traditions and wisdom and healing knowledge with us. And as you say, they are really very, very special artists. And selling their art is really, practical purposes, the only way they have of earning a bit of money while still staying in their homelands and maintaining their traditional life ways. So through the Blue Deer Center, we've set up what we call the Huichol Art Project. And myself and others go to the Huichol homelands and buy some of this sensational art, bring it back, and make it available to people here in this country and other countries. This is all on a non-profit volunteer basis. So the Huichol people benefit. There's no middleman to pay. And, of course, we make this wonderful sacred art available to people here.
Can people actually purchase this from you where you are presently?
Anybody actually who's interested in any of the things that we're talking about, I would suggest that they could go online and to bluedeer.org, and there are links there to these various things, the different programs, providers of the Blue Deer Center, the Huichol Art Project, Plant Spirit Medicine, and so forth.
Good.
Now, do they tell their story through the artwork?
Yes, that's part of it. The artwork is, it really was founded originally in the practice that they've had, millennial practice, of making beautiful art pieces for the gods to offer to the divine. And they were taken to the sacred places and left there as offerings. Now, outsiders coming in were very struck by the beauty of these things. And people were encouraged to make things, as trade items. But they're all based on their sacred relationships, and they all tell sacred stories.
Now, we have a center in Santa Cruz, Brent Secunda.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the same group of people? Do you work together?
We don't work together. Brent also, as you know, or may know, spent a number of years apprenticing with the Huichol people. And but his organization is a separate one from the ones that I'm associated with.
But they both have something to do with the sacred deer.
Yes, sacred deer is a very important, we could say totem animal for the Huichol people.
Is there a story behind the sacred deer?
Of course there is. But the best I can do now in this format is to say this. You know, a few moments ago, we were talking about tuning in to the rhythms of the earth, and I said, and it's something like, yes, there's rhythm, but there's also, song, the rhythm. To the Huichol people, the Huichol express this by saying, that the world is actually a song. Now, in some Eastern traditions, they say the world is a vibration. And this is another way of saying the same thing, that the world is a song sung by the divine. So so other traditions, they say the world is a dream dreamed by the divine. But the Huichols express that same thing by saying that the world is a song. Everything is singing. And that song is singing the world into being at every moment. And they say that the singer of the song is the blue deer.
Look at the importance of what the indigenous people bring us and their beliefs, how can we express that relevancy to us so that people who haven't experienced this understand?
Yes, it's an excellent question. And, ultimately, as I said before, it really is about experience. But to get a window on that relevancy, I would say, well, like I said before, you know, the if you just notice that before the indigenous peoples throughout the world have had contact with the invading outsiders, that almost all of them have managed to live for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years in a way that has kept the world and what we call, we could call, you know, modern term, like the ecosystem, in a very good state. Like, you know, in this country, what we call the United States, before the European peoples arrived here, you know, we had rich ancient forests on covering perhaps more than a third of the continent. We had, you know, prairies, we had clean water, we had clean air, rich soil, abundant wildlife, great biodiversity, and so on and so forth. And in only a few hundred short years of what I would call occupation, much of that has been, if not outright destroyed, at least seriously imperiled and polluted. So if we look at that, just that bald, difficult fact, we could say, you know, the peoples who lived here for so many tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of years, they must know something about how to live in a good way in the world that it would be really useful for us to find out.
I actually have a colleague at the office, and I was talking to her about the earth having meridians and a rhythm and a sound, and it transfers to our body. We pick it up, and she rolled her eyes back in her head. And so I thought, wow, we have a lot of work yet to do.
Yeah.
We do.
Well, we do, but, you know, I mean, there's good news and there's bad news here. What I mean is this, that, you know, as times go on, there are more and more people who find themselves open to these things, and more people who are interested in moving towards something that is truly sustainable, a way of life that is truly sustainable. And, by the way, in my view, sustainability has, well, something to do with technology, but it has more to do with a spiritual relationship to the world. We can come back to that if you want, but for now I would say there's more and more people who are becoming open to these things, and there's a lot of people who still are not. Well, for better or for worse, you know, as time goes on, you know, the way of life that we've built, which is, and we're living out of now, is experiencing a tremendous wobble and collapse. And, you know, institutions are failing, the ecosystems are collapsing, and so on and so forth. And so, of course, that's bad news in one way, but in the end, what that's going to produce is that when things get difficult enough, people are going to start looking for something that is practical. Like, it's going to be obvious that this way of life that doesn't respect the world and that is bringing so much unnecessary destruction isn't working. It's not going to be able to support itself that much longer. So people will begin to look for something, well, what is there that really works? And when they start looking around, they'll see that, well, it's already here. It's already been here. It's well proven. And that is the ways of these people who have got the instructions a long time ago and have been careful to follow them.
So, maybe we're going through a healing crisis.
I think that's a very good way of putting it.
So we have to get sick before we get better.
Well, the whole earth is rocking and rolling. I mean, it's pretty obvious what's happening here. The earth is screaming.
Yes, and it's more and more obvious all the time.
Mm.
So, you know, like I say, in the long run, I say that the outlook is good because, you know, people will be looking, start looking in the right direction for practical solutions. And, you know, right now a number of people feel that, you know, spirituality and certainly indigenous ancestral spirituality is outmoded or superstitious or impractical. But as time goes on, it's going to become more and more clear that quite the contrary.
Well, I see ancient wisdom kind of blending with science most recently. I mean, science is appreciating the ancient wisdom.
Yes, it's beginning to move in that direction, yes.
Hmm. What are some of the programs the Blue Deer Center will be offering this year?
Okay, well, I'm very pleased with what's coming up. So I'll just mention a few things I have here, or the Blue Deer Center is going to be offering. We have some of the most respected sangomas, which is roughly translated shamans, in southern Africa, coming back to the Blue Deer Center this summer, named Colin and Neil Campbell. They'll be offering a program called African Cosmology. And there's another well-known shaman from West Africa named Maladoma Somay, who has been to the center a couple of times, and we're in negotiation with him now to bring him back. There's Leohu Ryder, who is a kahuna, traditional kahuna from Hawaii. And she'll be at the center. We have a shaman from the Peruvian Amazon who works with plant spirits named Edda Zavala. And she's going to be at the Plant Spirit Medicine Conference, which will be held at the center this summer.
Oh, that would be great to go to.
It would be, and it's open to anyone who's interested.
So when does it start?
The conference?
Yeah. The programs, uh-huh.
Okay. Well, the program year is beginning in March. The conference, let me just look here. I've got so much on my calendar, I can't keep it in my head anymore. But the conference begins May 29th, and it's the 29th, 30th, and 31st. And Edit will be there, and also Bob and Lee Nitch. They are Sandakot Iroquois elders. And they're going to be sharing about their traditions as well. I'll be there and others.
Well, it sounds like you're bringing all the different types of shamanic work together under one roof.
Well, we're trying to bring a number of offerings, yes. And then I have several programs that I'm offering myself. I have healing camps where people come to receive healing in the Huichol tradition. There's a course on animal totems, that is to say, I guess you could say animal protective spirits, introducing people to their animal protectors and how to benefit from that. We also have something called the Fireball, which is a great party. We offer that every summer. And it's a way for people who are friends of the center to get together and have a great time, and live music and dancing and feasting, and that's a great one, too.
Hmm. Do you have any time for travel with all this going on?
Well, yes, but the problem is I'm unfortunately very seldom home because of that, between my engagements at the center and elsewhere. I'm speaking to you from Georgia right at the moment.
Oh, what are you doing in Georgia? Are you presenting?
I was, the last 5 days I was working with patients.
Oh.
Wow.
Now, on your website,
somebody works on you.
On your website, is all the events and the different places that you travel to, are they all listed on your website?
Yeah, there's links to well, of course, all the events of the Blue Deer Center appear there, and then there's links to other things where you know, associated things like my appearances elsewhere and so forth.
Will you be coming out to the West Coast this year sometime?
Well, I actually live in California.
Oh.
So I'm there occasionally, make a cameo appearance with my family.
Who is that person?
yeah. So let's see, in terms of programs. You know what? Anyone who's interested, I do have a email address, elliotcowansoffice@gmail.com. And if there's anyone in the West who'd like to know about what's happening out there, they can contact me through that.
Now,
okay, Elliot is, let me just say, Elliot is spelled with one T, so it's E-L-I-O-T.
Yeah, E-L-I-O-T-C-O-W-A-N, and then for my email, it's S after that, elliotcowansoffice@gmail.com.
And if they don't, they are driving and can't write that down, they can go on the Blue Deer Center probably and see that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bluedeer.org.
.org,
That's the one I would send people to.
Now, you started the Blue Deer Center, and it's in Upper New York. Is that where it's at?
That's right. It's in the Catskill Mountains. A very beautiful place.
Now, why do you live in California when you have your center in New York? It's the opposite sides of the country.
Good question. I think maybe the best answer to that is, it's really cold in the wintertime in the Catskills, and my wife is from Mexico.
Oh, that explains it.
Yeah, need I say more?
California has warmer weather.
Yeah.
Right. I've heard that there's an ancient story about the land at the Blue Deer Center.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell us about that story?
Yes, I could tell you that kind of a short version if we're all right for time, are we?
Oh, we've got 25 minutes, so yes.
Thanks. Okay, good. So now the that land in that area, in Margaretville, New York, this is what it's called now, was an area where two of the nations that belonged to what is now known as the Iroquois Confederacy, namely the Mohawks and the Oneidas, they both used to go to that part of the country there for their summer hunting and gathering. And then they would take what they had collected there, and they had their winter camps and villages in the Hudson River Valley. So the story tells that there was a camp in the broad Delaware River Valley near what is now the town of Margaretville one summer, where both of these peoples were making their camp. And at one moment, one of the young men of one of the tribes was found dead and apparently killed. And this caused a lot of accusations and counter-accusations, who is responsible, and so on and so forth. And there's a great deal of anger and misunderstanding on both sides, and it escalated to the point where it seemed that war was about to break out. Now, people are very... They were very interested in avoiding war, both because of what it is in itself and also for the practical reason that, if they were to spend all their time fighting during the summertime, they would probably not have enough food collected to make it through the winter. So they're very interested in seeing if they could have a council fire and work this out. But tempers were such that nobody could agree on how to do this. You know, one party claimed it as their land and it had to be done their way, and the other party claimed it for themselves and so forth. So another nation, Onondagas, who were living just to the west of there, were famous as council keepers of the council fires. And they sent for a shaman from the Onondaga people to come and see if he could make peace. They had trouble finding someone because the Onondagas, too, were out at their summer hunting and gathering camps. But they did find a young shaman who was back from pilgrimage to the Sacred Mountains to the north. He was a young man, but he had a good reputation. His name apparently was Tathakwanachi. And he came there and found that he couldn't get the people to sit down together at the same place. So he consulted with the mountains and the forests and the streams to see what should be done about it. And he was instructed to go up a nearby valley and walk along the stream there. The stream was called in the native language Saskawihiwine. And he said he was told to look for a sign in the stream of a special sacred place that the spirits of the place would support coming together and making peace and finding healing. So he did that. He walked up the stream, and at one place in the stream, he saw a perfect circle in the water. He said, "This is the place." So he claimed it as neutral territory under the Onondaga peacemaking umbrella, and he brought the two peoples from the other camp there, and they built a council fire, and they made peace and returned to their hunting and gathering. Now, from that time on, that place was recognized as a special sacred place. A council lodge was built there. And for many, many years, people went there to make peace and find healing, blessed by the spirits of the place. And even after hundreds and hundreds of years gone by, and eventually the council lodge fell into disuse, but people would still pass by there and leave offerings, recognizing this is a very special place. And that place where the circle was found and the lodge was built and so forth is now the place where the Blue Deer Center stands. Interestingly enough, since the center was purchased, since then, twice that circle has reappeared in the stream. Once in the wintertime in very, very, very thin ice, and once in the summertime.
Wow. So that, does that mean spirits communicating with you or with the center?
Yes, it's first of all, it's an acknowledgement that, acknowledgement of the place itself. It's an acknowledgement, you could say, that the people who are there, looking after the center are doing what the land wants and is, you could say, designed to do. And a kind of welcome. That's the way I read it.
And gratitude plays a great role, I would think, in all of this.
Yes, it does. It does. Because, you know, we've been talking a bit here about how I see the value and even the urgency of relearning some of these ancient ways of life, spiritual relationships. And, you know, there's great differences in one place and another throughout the world, but their basis is all the same. And the basis is that a recognition that the whole world and all of the expressions and all the forms and beings in it, they're all sacred. They're all expressions of the divine, and therefore they're to be respected. And therefore, also, we need to be in good relationship with them. And being in good relationship means that, it's a two-way street. It means that we take from the natural divine world only what we need. And when we take something, when we're given something, we're obliged to give something back. And what people, all human people, have found is that when they live according to those simple, what shall I call them, guidelines, that they find that the world is indeed alive and divine and provides for us. Now, when we live out of that experience, and I use the word experience rather than belief, but we can live out of that experience of having a living relationship with a living world that knows us and provides for us, and that we have all that we need in that way. And we have all that we need to give that kind of good life to our children and their descendants. Then gratitude just naturally arises.
I know some ancient tribes, when they shot an animal, they would have a ritual where they would actually thank the animal for giving its life for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's fundamental.
Well, Avatar recently also, Avatar recently also had that in their movie, you know, you're giving thankfulness that the animal or the individual has been on this earth. And I think that's why the movie is so awesome, because it does show that part of our world that not many people talk about.
Yes, but I'll tell you what, we talk about it at the Blue Deer Center, and we practice it as well. And but anyway, I haven't seen the movie yet. I really got to do that.
Well, it took 10 years to make, and I'm just thinking about what they were thinking 10 years ago. It was so much needed, and
yeah.
How it came now. So spirit works in mysterious ways.
Maybe more people are just ready. I mean, you know, like not everybody's ready. It's interesting. Oh, excuse me, go ahead, Paula.
No, when Elliot was talking about the tribes coming in and making peace, it just went through my head. Why couldn't we do that now in the world?
Yes, when people really realize that, that's what's needed, that's the way to live, and that is practical, then we'll get back to that.
Let's hope people get practical very, very quickly.
Well, yeah, time is running short, that's for sure.
I forget where I saw recently, it's really interesting, where an individual had died. Boy, it was some movie, I forget what it was called. Anyhow, it was a practice of the particular tribe that when the people died, they would sing to them so that they could find their way.
Yes.
And I thought that was pretty awesome. And when the man finally understood how powerful that was, because that helped the individual that had the loss also give thanks for having that person in their life and helping them on their way, and it's the connection of everything, and It's so powerful. I mean, people don't know what to do with their grief a lot of times.
Yes, it's a very important thing. And fortunately, it hasn't been completely lost. You know, it's those kind of funerary rites are still practiced by the Huichol people today. And there's a few of us in my community who have been initiated to offer a version of that that's appropriate for Western people. It's very important, as you're saying, both for the living and for the one who's passed on.
Do you work with the elders that have already passed on?
Yes.
Oh, that would be very interesting. Have you, when the first time you started working with the elders, were you surprised when they came in?
No, not entirely, no. I don't know what to say about that, but no.
Was your heart full of gratitude, probably?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, the working with the ancestors, well, let me say it this way, that when you're dealing with these ancient spiritual traditions and practices, they all pay a great deal of attention to having good relationship with the ancestors, because the ancestors, among other things, are they're kind of gatekeepers, and they open the doorways for so many things. So all of the indigenous traditions, so far as I know, pay a great deal of attention to the ancestors, and they're not seen as being gone. They're still present.
So you do rituals to bring them in?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in like a drumming circle or bringing, in fact, I was going to talk to you about your shaman journey with drumming, but I've been in a drumming circle where I've actually have seen ancestors drop in.
Yes, that does happen. They really like that sort of thing. I'll tell you, anyone who is particularly interested in ancestors, I would really recommend, if you can get out to the Blue Deer Center for Colin Neil Campbell's presentation. Those African traditions are very, very particularly strong on working with the ancestors, and their Colin and Neil are really they're wonderful presenters too.
So this is in March.
You know, unfortunately, I can't answer that right now. I'm not sure when.
Okay.
When I think something tells me it's going to be more like May, but you can look that up on the Blue Deer website.
Okay.
They're totally authentic, of course, for people like ourselves, they have an enormous advantage in that, in addition to the indigenous language of the people they originally trained with, they also speak English. They're bilingual, so makes their teaching very, very
fortunate for us.
Yes. So, like I say, all of the ancestral traditions have a great deal to do with the ancestors, but the African ones are particularly strong in that.
Now, when I was looking on your website, you had the shaman journey and with the drumming, where people can actually meditate with it.
Yes.
So I suggest people to go onto your website and find that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
It's quite wonderful.
Now, how did you really bring in the Huichol shamanism into your life? What particular aspect brought it into you?
I first, Huichol people first came to my attention through a magazine article. I had never heard of them before, but I found it absolutely riveting. And something told me I just had to get down there and meet these people, which I did. I spent several days in ritual with a very, very powerful and wonderful a shaman there. And while I was there, actually I went and visited with him a couple of times over the years. And while I was there, I was particularly struck by the beauty of a particular mountain peak that his village was underneath. Subsequently, I started having dreams and dream journeys where the, I guess you could say, the spirits or the deities, the god forms, associated with that mountain, visited me, and they offered me help with my patients, which I found was, very helpful, very effective.
Ooh.
So years later after that, I had moved to Mexico, and I ran across a Huichol shaman who I had met on a previous trip, and I said, you know, I have some dreams that I'd like to tell you about. And he said, well, come on over to my house, which I did later, and I told him the dreams about this mountain, and he listened very attentively. And after I was done, he said, well, yes, that's the way it is. And I said, what do you mean? And so he went on to tell me all about the different details in my dreams and how that was, it all fit in with the, you could say, the traditional knowledge of that place. And he said, now, since you've been dreaming like that, and since that mountain has been helping you, he said, you know, a lot of our shamans and healers learn their medicine by making pilgrimage there. He said, you should go there and make pilgrimage. But I would not be the one to take you there because I don't have a relationship with that place. But I know someone who knows that place very well, and I think he'd be very generous with his knowledge, and I'll introduce you. So we made another date, and he introduced me to this man who also listened to my story and became my teacher then and there. So I started making pilgrimage to that mountain, and then subsequently to other sacred sites. And I found, at first to my surprise, that what I was doing was that I had started, without really knowing it, on the path of a traditional apprenticeship in Huichol shamanism. And so that's how that started. And 6 or 7 years later, I was initiated as a shaman. And then 6 years after that, I had my second and final initiation.
So when did all of this begin?
Let's see. It would have been, I read the magazine article probably, I'm really bad with dates, you're going to have to forgive me here. I read the magazine article, my son, who's now 26, was almost 2, so it would be like 24, 25 years ago.
Well, so that was really, it was after you actually became an acupuncturist and everything.
Yes, it was after I had been practicing acupuncture for many years, and I was practicing plant spirit medicine at that time. So that came afterwards.
Well, it sounds like you went back home. You worked there before under that mountain.
Yes, I feel the same.
Now, and how did you get involved with the plant spirit medicine? You said some the Huichol, maybe.
This was before the Huichol.
Okay.
As I said before, I felt that I wanted to explore what I would now call the deep healing qualities that plants might have to offer, and I didn't know quite how to do that. And eventually, I was introduced to, a shamanic method of meeting with spirits, you know, in the dream state. You know, at that time, I was using the drum, as you mentioned before. And so I determined that I'd really like to find out from the plants themselves if they had anything to offer and so forth. And I hadn't been able at that time to find any living human beings who knew what I was looking for. And I didn't find any writing about it that was helpful, and I wasn't able to figure it out intellectually either. So what happened was I selected a plant that I had known and worked with in kind of a first aid way since my early days on the farm in Vermont. And I did this procedure to enter into a dream and see if I could find the spirit of the plant. So I did that, and I found the plant growing in my dream. And beside the plant, there was standing a young woman, a fairly ordinary-looking person in most ways, except there was a huge pair of translucent wings sprouting from her shoulders. So I assumed that this was the spirit of the plant that was taking that form in order to... so that I could relate to it.
Wow.
So I went up
to... That's hands-on.
Pardon?
That's hands-on.
Yeah. Shall I go on with the story a little bit?
Huh? Yeah, we've got about a couple of minutes.
Okay. So I went up to her and I introduced myself and I gave her thanks for the help she'd given before. And I said, you know, I'm here because I want to know if there's deeper medicine you have to offer, because in my healing work so far I found that, you know, it's the health of a person's heart and spirit that has more to do with their health problems than anything else, and do you have anything to offer in that way? And she looked at me for a moment before speaking, then she came closer and she said, yes, I'll help you. And not only that, my brothers and sisters, the other plant spirits, are going to help you with that too. We want to thank you for asking. Because we're plant spirits, we can't do anything without being asked, and we've been waiting for about 200 years for someone to ask us for this kind of help again.
Can I ask what kind of plant it was?
There's a plant called plantain. It's a very common, most people consider it a weed. But then she instructed me, and I thanked her in return, and, you know, I went home as quickly as I could and started going to school with all the weeds. And... they were very forthcoming. And so that's how my version of plant spirit medicine got started.
You know, thank you. That was so great to hear about. We've got about 1 minute on this side that if you want to wrap up a couple of things we haven't talked about, please do. And then
I have one question.
Yes.
You said traveling in Georgia, you're doing healings. Do you travel throughout United States and other countries doing healing work?
Yes, I do. Healing work and teaching as well. So so anyone's interested, you know, you can, again, look up BlueDeer.org, BlueDeer.org. Also, I want to add to that, you know, I also have a number of people who I've trained, both as plant spirit medicine practitioners and also shamans in the Huichol tradition. And they're doing very good work in many, many parts of this country and other countries as well.
So are they listed on the website?
The website will say how to get in touch.
Very good.
Thank you. Oh, wow. What a cozy hour with you, bringing such wonderful information. Thank you for spending your time with us.
Well, you're so welcome, and thank you for having me and giving so much of your time to listen to what I have to say.
Well, it was very important for people to hear. And for our listeners, we've been talking to Elliot Cohen. So thank you, Elliot, for being with us.
You're welcome.